do not like it.
Go live. Go live, but we're not for everyone. We're amateurs, so. Oh, Eric's not hearing us. Eric! Press the live button. Go live. Oh, we can't go for it.
Okay, we're on PR, the people that are listening here in live stream on Facebook and on YouTube. We play these HTTPL spells. Why? Well, because well, Kufar Akbar, everybody, hello. This is another edition of Radio Free Kafiristan. This is and always has been a radio program dedicated to rightly dividing the truth between Christianity and Islam. We examine the evidence for both of these faiths in order to arrive at the truth that leads us to this end. Thus go I, Shalom. Peace and blessings, everybody. This is, once again, your humble host, Eric Thekker, coming to you live from the cavernous depths of the Kafir Cave in Dar al-Harb, Kafiristan. We're here every Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. And we're doing a multiple, we're multitasking tonight, and we're actually getting better at it, or at least I am anyway. I am broadcasting here on Blog Talk Radio without having to use my phone as a separate device. I am broadcasting through StreamYard with a couple guests here in the studio, the panel guests, Adam and Rad, and Chris was here, but he said his internet died, but he said he'll be back once he gets it rebooted. And we're also simulcasting on Facebook with Radio Free Kafiristan page and the Cross and the Crescent Facebook pages, and then also on YouTube. So if you want to jump over to any of those places and interact in chat, or if you want to come to Blog Talk Radio and interact in the chat, that's quite all right too, because we're getting to be everywhere. Remember that a Kafir is someone who does not heed the beliefs and prescriptions held by the religion of Islam, and I make a play on that word and call the show Radio Free Kafiristan. Because Kafiristan is Dar al-Harb. This is the house of war where the Sharia Islamia is not applied. In those other countries where it is, you find utopia, of course. And that would be, I don't know, Afghanistan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Pakistan, all of those stands? I don't think so. So as long as I draw a breath, we're going to be in the land of Dar al-Harb here. If you want to call into the show, the call-in number is always area code 319-527-6706, area code 319-527-6706. Okay, tonight we are going to be talking, we're posing the question, actually the question that we're posing, is Muhammad the greatest man to ever have lived? Is Muhammad the greatest man to ever have lived?
Yes, 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 yes.
And we're already hearing from the peanut gallery that he is.
No doubt.
Kufar Akbar, I agree. Okay, so this self-proclaimed prophet is supposed to be the greatest man who ever lived. So what we have to, what I want to do is I want to actually break that down just a little bit and ask, well, what type of qualities would somebody who would be a great man have? What would they do over the course of their life? Would they be great leaders?
Perform suicides multiple times.
commit suicide multiple times. That would be actually a feat in of itself. You would think that great men would be great leaders, but then again, if you look at the meme that I have, we have Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler, no doubt about it, was a great leader. He led for the wrong reasons, but he was indeed a great leader. You know, and then the meme says, here's what the meme says. The only religion I respect is Islam. The only prophet I admire is the prophet of the prophet Muhammad. And this is from a book that a man wrote that has found quotes or things that Hitler had said. And this is one of the things that he said. And there's other things that we could look at that indicate that he was a fan of Muhammad and that he was a fan of Islam. Now, that doesn't automatically make Islam a bad religion just because Hitler liked it. It doesn't automatically make Christianity a bad religion because Hitler grew up an altar boy. But when you start looking at people's principles as they get older and how they apply them throughout their lives, this becomes very, very problematic. So what I want to do is I want to do a rundown of some of the things that Muhammad did during his life that we would consider. Okay, so as recorded in the Quran and Hadith, and if we were to do maybe a side-by-side comparison of who I would consider, and I would think that most people on this planet would consider, or at least put in the top 10, Jesus Christ. You have over 2.5 billion people on this planet, over one-third of the planet's population worship Jesus Christ, Son of God, and would say that he is the greatest man who ever lived a sinless life, was born of a virgin, performed many miracles during his life, died on a cross as a sacrificial atonement for our sins, my sins, and then rose from the dead. Yeah, that would probably qualify him. I don't know. Maybe he's the greatest man who ever lived. So when we compare him, go ahead, Adam.
Even the 80+% I'm being a little cautious in stating the numbers. So even the 80+ Muslims will believe that Jesus is sinless and he lived a very sinless life, performed miracles, but they don't believe in that he died on the cross. So that's why I used 80+%. But they still believe that he performed miracles of a kind that no other man has performed, and he lived a sinless life.
Yeah, and all 80% of Muslims believe that. You said that? You said that 80%?
Yes.
Okay, are there certain schools? Is there certain schools in Sunni Islam or Shia Islam that don't believe that you're aware of?
There are certain school of thoughts which says that every prophet made some sin, had some kind of a sin, because all men are sinners. So there are certain things that they will call, but once again, I'm being very cautious that is a minority. Then we go into Ahmadiyyas, who will actually say that he was crucified. He was killed, but not crucified, but he was killed. He died, not killed. He died, but he was not crucified. So to add all the things to be in positive, I just put 80% so that we will have a consensus.
Okay,
because there are certain nitpicks in the end of the 20%.
Okay.
Yeah, Islam can get really goofy, especially when you go out to, like, Persia, Pakistani, Hindi, or what is it called, the Hindu Kush, or whatever that region is. It can get really, really goofy. But I'm sorry. So let's get back to talk. Well, why are we talking about this Jesus fellow? When clearly, I mean, even though Jesus did all that, clearly Muhammad is the clear better prophet.
Greatest man ever, buddy. Please recite the right word.
Well, let's just look at some of the things that Christ said in the Garden of Gethsemane, that he who lives by the sword will die by the sword. But when we look at Sahih Muslim, he says that Muhammad says, I've been commanded to fight against people till they testify that there is no God but Allah, and that Muhammad is the messenger of Allah.
And your life and your wealth will only be protected when you actually say that. This is the chapter number one.
Oh, this chapter. Okay, I thought
book number one, chapter number 8 of Sahih al-Muslim.
Okay.
The whole chapter is on this.
Okay, so this is Sahih. This is a Sahih Muslim. Hadith. Okay, so this is a very sound tradition. And so he's saying that if you you have to profess that there's no God but God. Okay, great. But then what he's doing is he's elevating himself to God himself, because you have to now profess not only there's God, but you have to say that I'm God's messenger. That seems a bit twisted to me. No. I'm sorry. That sounds very twisted to me. If you
not only that, but you also have to if you obey Muhammad, then you're obeying Allah directly.
Yeah, and we're
Allah, obey Muhammad. Oh my goodness, why are you going this route?
Go ahead. You were just going to listen in, Adam, but I appreciate you chiming in here because you have these verses memorized.
Show my screen. I'll show you what I'm trying to do.
Okay.
You actually used the word a hadith, and you said sound. I'm actually telling you this is a whole chapter, which
actually
says that.
So switch on over here.
Very important.
Okay.
So you go to sunnah.com, go to Sahih al-Muslim, go to the first book of Sahih al-Muslim, which is Kitab al-Iman, which is the book of faith,
mm-hmm.
and find chapter number 8. And this chapter says, this whole chapter, it's not one hadith. The command to fight to the people until they say La ilaha illallah Muhammadur Rasulullah and establish Salah, etc., etc. Whoever does that, his life and his wealth are protected. And if you keep on reading multiple ahadith, the shorter one, let's read, there is no God but Allah, and he who professed it was guaranteed the protection of his and his property and his life on behalf of Allah. Same, the next. So there are multiple narrations. So basically, why there are multiple hadiths is saying the same thing? Because of the chain of narration. Hatsana Ahmad bin Abdullah bin Zahi, Hatsana Abdul Aziz, Yani Ardavis, etc. So different chain of narration.
Okay, no, let me ask you a question about that. Now, you say that there are different chains of narrations. Are you talking about the chain of narrations picked up at different spot, or it diverges from certain people?
So basically what happened is that the books of ahadith were written 300 years after the death of Muhammad.
Right.
Okay. So nobody over there at that particular time was alive who was living with Muhammad, obviously. It's been 300 years. So there is called a chain of narrators. So if I am saying this, I have to tell the guy that I heard this from Mr. Ali. And Mr. Ali heard this from Mr. Zubair, and Mr. Zubair heard this from Mr. Mustafa, and Mr. Mustafa heard it from Uthman, and Uthman heard it from Muhammad. So this is called the chain of narrators, that it is coming from this chain. So the authenticity of a hadith is how many chain of narrators says the same thing, and how many people in that chain of narrators are called sadiq, means the truthworthy. So the sadiq people in a chain of narrator, the most authentic that hadith is. At the same time, if you are having a chain of narrators, multiple chain of narrators saying the same thing, the most authentic that hadith becomes. And this is the most sound hadith ever. Because, let me just tell you something. This kilma of shahada that Muslims recite, this La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammad Rasulullah, I testify that there is no God but Allah and Muhammad is the last prophet. It is not in Quran. The first time this kilma has stated as is in Sahih al-Muslim. In Quran, you will see La ilaha illallah at one place, Muhammad ar-Rasulullah on another place, but you will not see it in one location. The very first time this shahada is proclaimed as the full kilma, as the full sentence, it's in Sahih al-Muslim. So that's why this book and this chapter is so very important. And that is why this book is called the Book of Faith, Kitab al-Iman. So that's the
big okay. I see. Because I couldn't figure out, well, why would fighting somebody be placed under the category of faith, of having faith? But now that makes sense, because this is, if you have to take the Shahada, and that's part of the faith practice, one of the
that's
five
the
pillars.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Okay. So When we're looking this, what we were basically looking at here to begin with was, as though Christ teaches us, he who lives by the sword will die by the sword. And then you have another guy saying, well, I've been commanded to fight against people until they testify there is no God but Allah, Muhammad is his messenger, or is the messenger of Allah. You have very stark differences. So what how did he put this into practice? So I went snooping today for a list of murders that were committed by or for Muhammad at his request. And I have a list here of
murders, 43, right.
Okay. And I'm just going to Okay. Let's call them assassinations then. Would you feel better about that? They do delineate between assassinations and murders here. So, you know, if we can use them interchangeably, if it makes you feel more comfortable and you don't want to have that Islamophobic aura coming out of your pores. Okay, the first one is Asma bint Marwan. And this occurred in January of 624. And
The first one.
Okay, so
she was a very old lady, just FYI.
Okay, so she's killed for opposing Muhammad with poetry and provoking others to attack him. Now, this is right after the Hijra, correct? Hijra is 623. Am I correct on that? 622. When's the Hijra?
I don't remember right now, but you are pretty...
Okay, so what he's doing is he is ordering... Okay, so Osama bint Marwan was assassinated, and this is according to the Sirah, the biography, and Ibn Sayyid Kitab al-Tabaq al-Kabir. Now, is that a commentary? Is that Tasfir? Do you know?
Recite the name first so that I would know.
Okay. Ibn Sa'd Kitab al-Tabaqat al-Kabir, volume 2.
Okay, I have no idea.
No idea. Okay, I know. I butchered the name. I admit it. Okay, so what? I butcher names. That's just what I do here.
The first narration is from Ibn Ishaq, which is very important. And if you can give me the page number, because I do not have memorized it, I can show it to you right now.
I don't have it. I gotta find this document. I had it up on my screen, but I do not have it now. But if I just click on this one.
And plus, at the same time, Muhammad killed 700 to 1,000 Jews in one day.
Yeah, well, we're getting to that. Right. Yeah, we're getting to that one. Okay, so this... Ganya, let's pull it up. Okay, so this would be Ibn Hisham Ishaq, page 675 and 676.
All right.
675 and 676. And then I'm going to click on this other. I'm going to click on this one while you're putting that on the screen. Let me find it. Go ahead, Brad. What's that?
Okay. I was just simply going to say that this segment has been brought to you by Count Urine Cola, the old Cola of Prophets. Okay. Drink it. It is refreshing. Always fresh. Never from concentrate. Never frozen. Camel Cola. Ask for it by name. One prophet out of 124,000 prophets all agreed Camel Cola is the Cola of Prophets.
And how much do we get paid for that ad?
We get paid by the Jews 10 cents every time we mention it. So we're gonna have to mention it a lot.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. Yeah. Okay.
But this is not the Cola of Prophet. It's the Cola of Muhammad. Okay, please understand that.
I said one out of 124,000 prophets all agree that camel urine is the best drink to drink, you know, when you're feeling kind of thirsty. And I guess I can get to that while we're waiting on you guys. So I'll get to my bed. So the reason why Muhammad is the greatest man of all time is how could he have known this? Okay? Going back to the, 600 AD when he lived. Okay, how could he know that camel urine had so much medicinal properties? It actually cures a whole host, whole range of diseases. Okay? The story is that there were these two dudes that came from somewhere up north, I believe. Okay? And they were not used to the climate, so they were rapidly dehydrated. They were ill from the climate. So Muhammad gave them camel urine to drink mixed with camel milk. Never had camel milk. I wouldn't be opposed to camel milk, camel urine thing. I mean, I drink my own urine before I drink a camel piss.
What?
Hey, no, I would. I mean, if I was out in the desert, you know what I'm saying? I mean, hey, I'm just saying. In that part of your SARS training, Mr. Eric?
No.
I've heard two different stories. I'm sorry, my man is an Army Ranger. Told me that's what they were taught.
Okay, well, I didn't go to Ranger school, so no, that's
right.
So while he is speaking, I'm showing the screen as well for the hadith. So please carry on, Red.
All right. Anyway, so point is this: these two dudes. They show up, they're dehydrated. Muhammad gives them camel urine, gives them camel milk. Again, camel milk, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to. Okay, but anyway, so these dudes drink it, and then they feel better, because obviously it's a miracle cure for whatever ailed them, because so much science, Western science, with the miraculous camel urine. You know what I mean? Anyway, so they drink this camel urine concoction, and they feel better. And what did they decide to do? They decided to run away. Not only did they run away, but they chased off all the camels, okay, to keep Muhammad from pursuing them. They killed one of the shepherds, the camel shepherds, okay, to make their great escape. And they run away and steal a couple of camels, but drive all the other camels off. But anyway, later they're captured, okay. And so I don't know. Anthony Rogers actually has a great video about how Muhammad said camel meat turns you into a raving beast of a man or something like that. It was very bad for you. But I guess camel urine makes people go out and commit murder and try to escape the people that are trying to help them. Either way, the Quranic verse was revealed down.
Quranic verse did not reveal at that particular time. Let me just tell you something over here.
Well, that's what I've
heard. It was his camel herd. And the shepherd was his slave.
Mm.
That is why I'm showing this specific hadith. And if you can go to the specific hadiths B and C, you will see even further. That's why I'm highlighting it. Muhammad ordered to follow his shepherd, i.e. his camels, and drink their milk and urine as medicine. So they followed the shepherd, and they did that. And then they drove away with the camel and killed the shepherd. And then the prophet pursued, and etc. And they brought it. He cut their hands and feet and braided their eyes. And in the other extensive hadith, if you go to sunnah.com, just copy paste any of this line and put it there. The other hadith, they were thrown in the ditch and they were asking for water. So these people whose eyes were taken off by putting iron rods into them, their hands and feet are cut from the opposite side. They are asking for water. They are already dying. And nobody give them water even. And they say, at the end they say, that this was before the legalized punishment order of Quran. They say it in one of the hadiths, in only one of the hadiths, they'll have a braces at the end saying this was before the legalized punishment of Quran. But like, look, if Muhammad is a mercy for all mankind, which Quran says that that the Nabi Muhammad is the mercy for the Alameen, the worlds, not even just this world, the worlds. And before that, if what they say is in the braces is correct, that was before the revelation of Quran verse of eye for an eye or whatever, this is even worse. Because Muhammad had no mercy whatsoever. He was revengeful.
Come on. This is clear signs that Muhammad is the greatest man to have ever lived. I mean, think about this. Okay, here's Muhammad. He's given the urine, okay, and the milk from his own camels to these dudes, okay, and they get healthy. How do they repay him? By driving off all his camels, stealing a few of them, and killing his personal slave. I mean, come on, clearly, this is a mercy. And yes, every single Quranic verse has come after the incident that the hadith describes it. No, seriously, because the hadith actually describes the event And then you have why the, then you have the Quran verse revealed, to justify Muhammad's greatness, Muhammad's wonderfulness of torturing some dudes. Dude, okay, seriously, think about this for a second. These dudes, okay, this story has to be somewhat tainted, okay? Because I am telling you, think about it. If you go out to be supposedly this great prophet, and you wind up in this desert town, and you get really sick, and they give you medicine, whatever, and you feel better, do you honestly think your first reaction is going to be to drive off the herd of camels? Well, you steal a couple of the camels, drive off the herd, the rest of them, so they can't follow you, and kill the shepherd to make your, what does that sound like? An escape. In other words, these dudes got there, and they realized they were joining a death cult, or they were joining something that was weird, and they wanted to leave, and Muhammad said, no, you ain't leaving us, you know what I mean? But anyway, but that's the reason why Muhammad is one of the greatest men to ever live, or actually the greatest man to ever live, because he prescribed camel urine as medicine, and all the scientific proofs out there prove it. Seriously.
Yeah, no, it's not even fake.
It's
pure
sketch.
That's the point.
And COVID.
Okay. Could you guys hear the already then playing over the? Could you guys hear that?
No.
Let me try it again. Can you hear that?
You're playing Adan?
Yeah. No. Okay. No. That was just. That's just a sound effect that I have on my my radio show.
No, it didn't transfer over here. I mean, we barely heard it.
Yeah, I'm gonna need to figure that one
right,
out.
We'll
work on it. We're not worried about it today. Okay, but I want to go back to this the biography of Muhammad and talk about this
Osama
D. Marwan. I have it right here. Yeah. Let's see here. Yeah, okay, so here's what she wrote. To get her killed. She wrote, "You obey a stranger who is none of yours, one not of Murad or Mahaji or Mahajij. Do not expect good from him after the killing of your chiefs, like a hungry man waiting for a cook's broth. Is there no man of pride who would attack him by surprise and cut off the hopes of those who expect aught from him?" So by writing this, by writing this, she has herself targeted by Muhammad, because this is what they said. This was for provoking others to attack him, is what was said. So this, how old was she, Adam? 80 years old, you said?
80 plus, yes.
80 years old. Okay, so when you drop down there, it says, "When the apostle heard what she had said, and he said, 'Who will rid me of Marwan's daughter?'" So he said, who is going to get rid of this woman for having the temerity to point out what I've been doing for the last couple of years to you guys? Somebody's got to kill her. Umar bin Adil al-Khatami, who was with him, heard him, and that very night he went to her house and killed her. In the morning he came to the apostle and told him what he had done, and he said, "You have helped God and his apostle, O Umar." When he asked if he would have to bear any evil consequences, the apostle said, "Two goats wouldn't butt their heads about her." So Umar went back to his people. Is this the greatest man that ever lived? A man who is criticized and who has what he has done to a people group publicized, he's going after the publicist. He's going after the person who actually said this, who actually wrote this. This sounds an awful lot like Charlie Hebdo. This sounds an awful like about that, what was that guy, Lars, who's the guy that was killed up in, was it Sweden or Norway, had a knife stuck right through his heart right in the middle of the street for making a movie. Rad, you don't know what I'm talking about. But anyway, this is when anytime that you provide any type of criticism, this is exactly what happens. Here's another murder. Abu Afak. Afak, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, Afak is
Afak. Okay, Abu Afak killed the Jewish poet Abu Afak for opposing Muhammad through poetry, and according to Ibn Sa'd, instigating the people against Muhammad. So let's take a read of what this guy had to say. This is the page right before it, too. Adam, if you're tracking on that, you want to show it on the screen.
Which one? What is the page number?
675. It's right before it. You're in 675. There we go. Okay, so here, Abu Afak was one of Bi Amr Bi Auf of the Bi Ubayda clan. He showed his disaffection when the apostle killed Al-Hira Bi these names kill me. I'm sorry. I don't want to completely butcher them and be disrespectful, but you can see. Okay. Long have I lived, but never have I seen an assembly or collection of people more faithful to their undertaking and their allies when called upon than the sons of the Kayla when they assembled. Men who overthrew mountains and never submitted. A rider who came to them, split them in two, saying, permit, forbidden, all sorts of things. Had you believed in glory or kinship, you would have followed Tuba. Then the apostle says, who will deal with this rascal for me? Whereupon Salim bin Umar, brother of Bi Amir Bi Auf of the Weepers, went forth and killed him. So here you have Muhammad ordering the death, writing poetry against him. Now, I don't want to minimize what poetry meant back then. Poetry was just probably the akin, since you're living in a very oral culture at this time, and you don't have newspapers or magazines or whatever to hang around. They weren't, letters weren't going around. This is how they delivered news in those days. This is through poetry. So poetry could indeed, and I'll admit this, be a very dangerous thing. But to kill the messenger, to kill the person who writes these things, who says these things, would that make that person the greatest man ever, who ever lived? What's that now?
That's how Islam spread. If he would not have killed these people, how do you think Islam would have spread? So Islam is spreading because of the oppression of any voice that is raised against Islam. That's how it spread. Like, every indicator of every hadith shows you that. Why can't you accept that?
Well, it is. You're absolutely right. I agree completely. And the irony of it is just absolutely amazing. Here you have people saying, well, Islam is the, is peaceful religion in the world. Islam, is tolerant of all other beliefs and all other systems. And the bottom line is absolutely not. When you start looking at, this is why Charlie Hebdo happened. This is why, people are killed all over the world for having the temerity to criticize Muhammad. It's in the Sharia. It's in reliance of the travel to criticize Muhammad is considered apostasy, is considered blasphemy. And blasphemy is, as Adam can attest to, a little offense in some countries. If we just recently we saw in horror this whole ordeal over Asha Bibi from Pakistan, and she was, I don't even, Adam, do you remember exactly what that woman said? It was so insignificant. It's startling that they would sentence this woman, all 5'2" of her, to death. And have her sit on death row, languish on death row for 8-9 years. And then finally, after she's released, the whole country loses its mind. They said, well, we can't have this. Shabibi, yeah, we can't have this woman out on the streets. There's no way we can allow this because she blasphemed against Muhammad. Not Allah, Muhammad. And in turn.
Last time I did a live stream, just a few weeks ago, one Muslim killed another Muslim because the other Muslim did a blasphemy. And you know what the blasphemy of the other Muslim was?
What?
He said that Muhammad, just like any other person in the world, is also a dependent. He is not an independent. He is not somebody who can do. He is also dependent. Just by saying that he is dependent, the other guy got so furious and they had an argument. The other guy killed him that he is a blasphemer. And after that so-called blasphemy. That guy is giving, he was put into jail, and that guy is standing on the wall of the jail. You know, the wall of the jails are pretty high. He's standing on the wall of the jail, and he is addressing the people who came there to say goodbye to him, because now he's going to put into jail. So, imagine that, man. I've done a whole live video on that.
Because he said that Muhammad was dependent and not an independent guy.
So basically,
well, I was just going to remind you, that reminds me of a funny story when ISIS was really gaining ground in the early days of ISIS, when they were still actually Islamic heroes. No, they were. In the Muslim Sunni world, ISIS were considered liberators. They were considered heroes. People forget that. But they killed one of their own comrades, a wounded comrade, who was calling out the name Ali because Ali was his friend, okay? And they said he was a Shia, and they beheaded him right there.
Wow.
You know, come on. I mean, seriously, this is the level of the greatest men in the world, obviously. I mean, clearly, these are clear proofs, clear signs. You know, I don't know why you guys are saying anything different. I mean, what's wrong with all of this, dude? I don't understand.
Well, we're not even on number three yet, guys. But go ahead, go ahead.
I wanna show this before we go, because I claimed something that this is how Islam spread. So I wanna show this as well, so that the scholars' agreement came up as well. So I'm gonna play it.
Oh yeah.
It's in Arabic, but it has English translation, and I will translate anything further.
Al Qadawi.
كان انتهى الإسلام منذ وفاة الرسول عليه الصلاة والسلام، فالوقوف أمام الردة والذي أبقى الإسلام. وفي آية المائدة: إنما جزاء الذين يحاربون الله ورسوله ويسعون في الأرض أن يقتلوا أو يصلبوا، جاء عن أبي قلابة وغيره من التابعين، إن هذه جاءت في المرتدين، وجاءت أحاديث كثيرة.
Hadith Kaseera, there are so many ahadith. First he recited Quran chapter number 5 verse number 33 and saying that they are creating facade in the world, hence they should be killed. Then he recited that there are so many hadith, and now he's going to recite a couple of hadith.
واحد ولا اثنين ولا ثلاثة أحاديث كثيرة عن عدد من الصحابة يعني في يقتل المرتد. حديث ابن عباس
مقتل المرتد means kill the apostate.
أسلم بدل دينه فاقتلوه. حديث ابن
من بدل دينه فاقتلوه. Whoever changes the religion, kill him.
ابن مسعود لا يحل امرئ إلا من إحدى ثلاث: السيب الزاني وال.
Yeah, so now he's reciting another hadith which says that you can kill nobody except a person who is zani, wrongful adulterous person. Adulterous person or an apostate.
نفس
من ذا means kill for kill.
تارك لدينه المفارق للجماعة وحديث أبي موسى الأشعري ومعاذ ابن جبل.
So now he gave some other names for that. So yeah, that's the reality of the situation, how far you can run away. Secondly, if you see chapter number 47, verse number 3 of Quran, which is very clear in saying that do not go for peace. Whoever says that Islam is the religion of peace, they are going against the Quran. Please show my screen again, Mr. Eric Smith.
Show you what? We're in the Quran?
Show my screen again. Yes, we are on the Quran.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So you said Islam is a religion of peace. Like you can see, Salam, Islam, a lot of Muslims come to say and that Islam comes from the word Salam. And Quran says, do not weaken and call yourself for peace. Do not call yourself peace while you are superior. When you are the uppermost, because then Allah is with you and will never deprive you of your deeds. So do not call for peace. Quran chapter number 47, verse number 35, when you are the uppermost. So Islam is not peaceful. Islam is not peace. They actually, this is Salam. You know, they say Salamu Alaikum, the same word, Salamu Alaikum, when they greet each other, peace be upon you. Basically, Muslim or Islam, which they say is peace, comes from the word Salam. That same word is over here in the middle, saying, do not weaken yourself, call for peace. Do not go for peace when you are uppermost. So they are only peaceful when they are not the uppermost. As soon as they are the uppermost, they are not peaceful, full stop. Quran says that, and they follow it.
Hey, hold on a second. You said something. Full stop. What does that mean?
Full stop means end of discussion. Sorry, my.
Okay. Full stop. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I disagree with you, because if you go to the Quran, chapter 5, verse 32, doesn't this? This is what we hear all the time. That this Quran. I'm kidding. Let me go back to.
That's
my point. We've prescribed for the Jews, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And but this is.
That is for
right, and then we're crucifying people and cutting off their hands, and we're cutting off their feet in the very next verse. Yeah, right there,
okay.
Crucified.
Let me just interject here. You guys have to understand, okay, that when it says crucified in the Quran, it doesn't mean the Roman form of crucifixion.
Okay.
It means they're crucified after they're dead. See, that makes it all better.
Well, ISIS was actually doing that in Mosul. They would kill them and then they would crucify them. Okay, let me stop sharing here.
Chop off your hands and your feet, and then
after you bleed out, yeah. Okay, then we'll stick you up on a cross. There you go. It makes it so much better because you're already dead, right?
Exactly. That's why Muhammad is a mercy to mankind.
Okay. Al Nadir Ibn Al Harith, Al Nadir Ibn Al Harith, 624, according to this biographer here, Al Nadir was captured during the Battle of Badr. A Quran verse was revealed about Nadir bin Harith. Is that how you pronounce it, Harith? Harith. For mocking the Quran as tales of the ancient. He was one of two prisoners who were executed and not allowed to be ransomed by their clans because he mocked and harassed Muhammad and wrote poems and stories criticizing him. According to Waqidi, he also tortured companions of Muhammad. So what I did is I pulled up the Quran verse that is supposed to have revealed this book that is exists for all eternity. And here's what it says: when thou readest unto him our revelation, saith, mere fables of old men. So I'm assuming this is a quote from this Al Nadir Ibn Harith guy. So here you have Muhammad executing for saying that what Muhammad is doing is he's just repeating tales of the ancient. And you know, we did this was part when I start talking about I like to give a presentation on why we know that the Quran is false. And one of the reasons why we know the Quran is false is because all of the insertions, the borrowed insertions from other works of literature that we find within the Quran. And these tales, the seven sleepers of the cave, you have all kinds of Syriac folklore in there. You have all kinds of Talmudic and Midrash in there. You have Gnostic sources in there. These were all tales of the ancients. So what this guy is doing is he's calling Muhammad out and saying, look, you're just repeating these tales of the ancients. You're just repeating what was said before. Why isn't my mouse working here? I'm sorry.
Dude, Muhammad was so revengeful. So revengeful, I'm sorry to say that, but he was. That when he captured Makkah, which Muslims comes in and say, hey, at the time of Makkah, see, no blood was shed, etc., etc. Muhammad actually ordered to kill specific people, even if they are hiding behind the curtain of Kaaba. You know what the Kaaba is? The black corner,
sure.
Black centerpiece,
mm-hmm.
Right? He said that they should be killed. Let me just show my screen for that. Hold on. Because this is all written in their own scriptures. They can't hide for that. So this is once again Life of Ibn Ishaq. Okay. The article number 819. And if I go for the page is 550. Okay. The apostle has instructed his commanders when they entered Makkah only to fight those who raised sword against them, except a small number who were to be killed even if they were found beneath the curtains of Kaaba. And among them were Abdullah bin Saad, and etc. There are certain other people in the whole few chapters. But like, he was so revengeful. And you know why Abdullah bin Saad bin Abi Sarab was supposed to be killed? This is a very important point, right? Because Abdullah bin Saad bin Abi Sarab, that's his full name, was one of the writers of Quran when Muhammad speaks.
I've heard this. Sites. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
I did a full live stream and shown from the 8 different tafsir saying the same thing. So one day Muhammad was telling about how the man is born, the semen goes in, the semen gets become blood, the blood become clot, the clot become bones, the bones become bones were covered by the flesh, etc. And Abdullah bin Abi Sarah,
Scientific
America,
all am due to Allah, all am due to Allah.
Yes, praise be to Allah.
Oh,
so anyhow, he was so amazed to listen to that, and then he said, "Oh Allah, the best of all creators." Okay, all praise to Allah, the best of all creators. And Muhammad said, "Okay, write it down." It was revealed as is. And Abdullah bin Saad bin Abi Sarah said in response, he said, "Muhammad, if you are truthful and this is a wahi that you get, then I was given the wahi as is because I said it before you. Else, you are a kazab, you are a liar. Otherwise, you are a kazab, you are a liar." And this is written as in 8 major tafsir of Quran of that verse. It is in Asbab al-Nuzul, it is in Tibri, it is in Murtqatri, it is in multiple. I have shown that. So, now he was so furious against him that he wanted to kill him, even though he was the cousin of Uthman. And he just wanted to kill him. So that's the reality of the situation. He's so revengeful. My friend, I don't know. That's what makes him the greatest man ever, by the way.
Yeah, you're all over it. Yeah.
Can I just interject here? I'm sorry to keep interrupting here. But I have to sit there, okay? So you're just giving more and more clear signs that Muhammad
is the greatest man.
Exactly. I mean, seriously. Well, first of all, getting back to your first point about the tales of old, Eric. I mean, all these stories and stuff. Muhammad couldn't read, okay? So how could Muhammad have known about all these tales of old that we couldn't read? He would have had to be a college graduate, you know, at least take 2 classes. You know, in a college being a PhD. But, okay, so this is clearly another clear sign that the Quran is from Allah and Muhammad is the greatest man, because Muhammad could not have known about all these tales of old that are contained in the Quran, right? I mean,
exactly. So let me give you another tale.
Wait, hold on, Adam. I'm going to address you, because, so... You brought up that this dude, okay, that Muhammad ordered to be killed, called Muhammad a liar. Well, clearly, that is more clear proof that Muhammad was not a liar. Clearly, he's not a liar since Muhammad took Mecca and was able to kill. But you didn't tell the rest of the story. This dude was not killed. Muhammad actually, they went to kill him, and they looked at him, and they said, and Muhammad, you know, just kind of snarled at him, you know, and they, you know, the boys from it was Abu Bakr, you know, the crew, they said, do you want us to kill him or not? Muhammad didn't say anything.
No. You are not in the previous story, which is in chapter, which is in 212. So when he was at Medina writing the verses, and he said that and ran away, Uthman begged for his life. So Uthman actually begged for his life. So when he begged for his life, he went off, and Uthman sent him to Makkah. Okay, then he's living in Makkah. So how can Muhammad say again in front of Uthman, even though that he already gave the order? So he wanted somebody to just fulfill the order, because he already gave the order that this man should be killed, even if he is behind the curtain. But Uthman was a powerful, big man who Muhammad didn't want it to go against anyways. So he didn't do that. But as soon as Saad bin Abi Sarah went off, Muhammad said, "Do you want me to point my finger and say it?" So he was very angry that why nobody killed him. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And that's more clear proof that Muhammad is the greatest man that ever lived. Think about it, okay? He wanted this dude killed. They brought him up in front of him. That, you know, they said, do you want us to kill him or not? And Muhammad's like, I already told you once. You should have already done it, okay? But I'm not going to point my finger at you because I'm really a coward because I'm afraid of Uthman, okay, who just begged for the dude's life. So, you know what? I'm going to make political things. I'm going to spare his life. And this dude, by the way, actually reconverted to Islam. So what's the problem, says the Muslim? I'm just saying, what's the problem there, you know?
He did not. There is only one location where it says that, the rest of the location does not say that. And once again, we are going back to the problem where if you have, like, they bring up that Aisha was 19. I bring up
a star fucking law.
I bring up 80 ahadiths with different chain of narrators. So are you going to accept that or that? You know, that's the whole situation.
Listen. Nobody is saying anything about this or that or the other thing. What we are saying this is that Muhammad is the greatest man to ever lived because, well...
Like, who would marry a 6-year-old girl when he is 53? Yes, greatest man ever.
Well, I mean, come on. I mean, Aisha seduced him, dude. Clearly, Aisha seduced him, man. I mean, that's clearly her fault.
At the age of 6, right?
Yes, exactly. You know, not only that, but wait a second. She was promised to him. He saw her in a dream in diapers. You know, so you know, Muhammad, you know, I mean, come on. This is true love. This is like Romeo and Juliet, man. You know, how can you say this about the greatest man who ever lived? You know, just slide it.
We don't even have to go there with the Aisha age 9 or 6 or whatever the deal is, because, and I mean that in and of itself would land you in the lowest depths of prison today. So
I want to show the tale of the past as well. If you can show my screen.
Okay, we're gonna be moving away from murder.
Muhammad knows a lot. So Muhammad of the Prophet Muhammad said, Abu Huraira narrating, this is Sahih al-Muslim. He says, Moses do not used to take bath naked, right? So Prophet Moses used to take bath alone. They said, by Allah, nothing prevent Moses from taking bath with us except that he had a hernia. So once...
That's kind of some serious...
No, this gets good. Hold on. This gets better. Because go ahead.
Wait, radical. So once Moses went out to take a bath and put his clothes over a stone, and then the stone ran away with his clothes.
What?
Yes.
Wait, stop.
Now Moses is naked in the swimming pool of whatever river or whatever. Moses followed that stone saying, my clothes, oh my clothes. Till the people of Bani Israel saw him naked, obviously, they didn't write naked over here, and said, by Allah, Moses has got no defect in his body, so there is no hernia. So Moses took his clothes and began to beat the stone.
Hell yeah,
How do you beat a stone? With another stone?
By Allah, there are still 6 or 7 marks present on that stone from the excessive beating of Moses.
Allaham due to Allah. See, that's more proof that he is the greatest man, that Muhammad is the greatest man to ever exist. Because if he wasn't the greatest man to ever exist, then how come the stones, you know, didn't steal his clothes? Because clearly Moses is not the greatest man to ever exist. So therefore, you know what I mean? The stones would have, you know, the stones steal Muhammad's clothes. No, I don't think so. Did Muhammad have to beat the stones? No, I don't think so. So clearly, Muhammad is the greatest man to ever live because the stones did not steal his clothing like they did the Moses.
Yeah.
Okay, enough of that. That's just hilarious. Okay, so
you were at the top.
I know, but I mean, it's just some of these things that when they say that these hadith are sahih, where they're sound, you know, and the other argument for the history of Islam is, well, we can trace the history of Islam back to Mecca, which there's no external evidence outside of the hadith for Mecca existing in the 7th century. And the argument is often made that, well, we can trace all of the history of Islam by looking at the Sahih Hadith, and this is your Sahih Hadith. So how can you believe that stuff?
Dude, haven't you ever beaten a stone, dude? Haven't you ever chased a stone while running against the sole of your clothes? Come on, that's never happened to you, dude? Really, are you
lying?
That's never happened to you because, yeah, it's never happened to me.
You know, it was... The miracle of the Hadith is that it would be a miracle that people believe that. That's the miracle.
And
they'll sit there and they'll cast stones at you for even mentioning that. Okay, I want to get off this idea that he was a murderer, because that's just one of the things that we had listed tonight, demonstrating that he cannot and will not ever be anything close to being the greatest man who ever lived. But also, he had his own dealings in slavery. Now, today in the United States, one of the most sensitive topics that you can talk about is the institution of slavery and the transatlantic slave trade and the practice of slavery in our country's history. Because of this Black Lives Matter movement going on, and what they're doing is they're pulling down statues of a lot of the great war heroes from our nation's, or some of the heroes from our nation's history, i.e. Thomas Jefferson. They're pulling down statues of Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson, you know, the guy that wrote the Declaration of Independence, the guy that was responsible for doubling the size of our country with the Louisiana Purchase, that Thomas Jefferson. And the reason why is because, well, he owned slaves. He owned slaves, and since he owned slaves, and he actually fathered a child, raped one of those slaves and had a child with one of those slaves, we cannot honor anything that this man did. So my question would be, can we do the same thing with Muhammad? Can we do this?
It's so common.
It's what?
It's so common in the time of Muhammad. They call them Umul Walad.
Well, it was common in the time of Thomas Jefferson, too.
Doesn't make any difference then. These black people, dude, whatever they are, you said Black Lives Matter. Most of them are, a significant percentage of them are Muslims, and they come back and abuse me every day. And I told them the same thing. I was like, go and first change your own history. Like, when you do not say anything to Muhammad or the people at the time of Muhammad, when they were even selling Umul Walad means is the slave that you didn't marry, but you had sex with, and she bore a child for you, that woman is called Umul Walad. So when you can even sell that woman after she has given birth to your kid, and you do not have any problem with that, how come you have a problem with this guy?
Yeah, and it's hypocrisy. That's the word for it. I remember I was driving I was downtown. I think it was on 9th Street someplace, and there was a guy handing out newspapers. Had Muslim garb on. Well, it wasn't Muslim garb. It was Nation of Islam garb on. And when I pulled up, I rolled down my window, and he looks in the car. And I said, "Can I get one of those?" And he goes, "It's $2." And I'm like, he was giving them out to everybody else, but he saw me. He goes, "It's going to be $2. I'm like, okay, give me $2. Well, it was a newspaper from the Nation of Islam. And if you follow the teaching of the Nation of Islam, you want to talk about a bigoted group. Oh, my goodness. I just turned the paper over and I read the back of it. And it gives their statements of beliefs. And it says that all white people and all black people should be separated. There should be no integration of the races at all. That there's a whole laundry list of other things that it said. And when they're following the teaching, well, number one, they're considered a heretical group by Islam because they believed in Elijah Muhammad being another prophet after Muhammad, which can't be because Muhammad's supposed to be the last prophet. But with that said, they still believe that Muhammad was a prophet. And at the same time, Muhammad practiced African slavery. He enslaved people. He had sex, meaning he raped. If you're going to have Jefferson raping his slave girl, which I would agree that would be a classical definition of rape, is if you have no control or you are not giving your consent, then it is rape. He raped women. He sold slaves, and he owned slaves. But yet, you're going to castigate, follow a prophet that did all these things, but yet you're going to castigate some of our Thomas Jefferson and other heroes from our nation's history that did other great things. If you were only going to have statues of perfect people, I would be all for that, because the only statue that we would have everywhere is a statue of Jesus Christ. But then you would have people lamenting, as I did on Facebook the other day. You deal with this one guy is. Can't remember his Greg Abdul, I think, is everything to him is racial. I mean, everything is about the European portrayal of Jesus. Then we would have arguments what Jesus was supposed to look like. So you can't win for losing.
I did a hadith, so I wanted to show it as well.
Go ahead, bring it up. Go ahead, bring it up, because I know there's all kinds here. Target rich environment,
yeah.
As I told Red.
So we
before.
Used to sell our slave woman and the mother of our children, like I said. That it is called Ummul Walad, okay? So, mother of our children, and they are saying that Behatul Awladin, when the Prophet was still living among us, and we did not see anything wrong with them. So these are Ummul Walad. This is
hold on. Go back up.
Our slave woman.
Okay, so there's this is basically saying, okay, they would father children with these slaves and still sell the mothers. Is that
yes?
Yeah. Okay. And this is okay. So this is the type of slavery that was abhorred. That is abhorred. Right. This is the type of behavior that's abhorred here in the United States, and rightly so. I teach this stuff. You know, this is in my curriculum where we talk about the slave trade, transatlantic slave trade, and the selling of slaves at slave markets here in the United States. So to say that it's evil, which it is, and this is why we teach it, saying, look, this is what we used to do. Let's not do it again. Okay, guys. And you know, every student in the classroom heads going up and down. Yeah, it was evil. But yet, if you point this out,
we did not see anything wrong with that.
What? Muhammad did it. So what can be wrong with it? Well, if Thomas Jefferson did it, why, what could be wrong with that? Well, Thomas Jefferson wasn't a messenger of Allah. But yet we're not supposed to follow the sunnah of Thomas Jefferson, are we not? But you're supposed to follow the sunnah.
Don't read another one. Same thing.
Go ahead.
He's saying the same thing. Read another one. This is what Bahagur amount. And another one, and you will see multiple ones over here very easily. I'll show you another article of mine, because I cannot go to all of the hadiths. This is my own written article. It is adamseekeroftruth.com/Muhammad and slaves. And here you will see.
What's your website, Adam? I didn't know you had a website. This is your website?
Adam Seeker of Truth. Yes, sir. This is my website, adamseekeroftruth.com. And it has multiple articles in it. One of the major articles where I'm showing at least 20 or 30 different ahadiths where Muhammad having black slave camel driver, Muhammad having black slave at home, and these are all sahih. Muhammad received black slaves as gift. Muhammad had Aisha escorted by slaves. By the way, any woman that is supposed to be escorted by a slave, the slave's penis has to be cut off. Otherwise, they cannot escort.
They're not? Okay, so, now let's make sure we make it. Hold on, Rad. Rad, nobody, no, we're not talking about doing it to you, Rad. Now, hold on just a second. This is an important part of it. We're not talking about castration and making them a eunuch. They're talking about the complete removal. On that, Adam?
Yes, the thing that is hanging.
Right. The penis, yeah, it's not, not the scrotum, where you would remove the testicles, balls.
Yes.
This is not made for children, so we're good. But you remove the penis itself.
Yes.
Go ahead. This is amazing.
Wait a second. Hold on.
I didn't know. I knew that the castration just didn't include the testicles.
Radical wait. I'll give you time. So let me go through that. Muhammad with his slave girls at home, having bang, bang, ding, dong, ding, dong. Muhammad Taylor was also a slave. Muhammad slave trader, he traded slaves. So instead of giving money, he gives slaves. And then Muhammad canceling the freeing of slaves. There were some people who said, okay, when I die, free my slave. He said, don't free them. And he also said to his daughter, why do you free the slaves? Like, it would be better that if you have given it to your family member. Mm-hmm. And if a slave run away, then kill him. You can just kill him. Go kill him. Slave is also given as blood money. So if you have killed somebody, you can give him your slave, and that's also there. Don't free a slave, give it to your family, and he's talking to Abbas. Okay, Abbas is his cousin. Kill everyone and male children and women slaves. So these are the capture of war. So that is on the battle of Khaybar, when he killed everyone, and all the women and children were captured as slaves. So a guy came and he said, like, give me a slave. He's like, oh, go pick whatever you want. Enjoy and have fun. Have a bang bang ding dong with that girl. Like, there are so many, and you will not find one single article giving you these many. I'm scrolling pretty fast. These many slaves in one single article. So enjoy this article, guys. I'm stopping. Yes, all yours.
Definitely post a link to that. We got to put that in the description of the YouTube as well as the Facebook comment on it, whatever. That's a great article. But you're still a filthy mutard, so I don't believe anything.
Yeah, I am. And my head is halal, and they can actually kill me and cook me and eat me.
No, man. Oh, no, you got to share that video. Eric, have you seen that video, dude?
Which one's that?
There's a mom saying you can cook and eat the apostate.
No, that's not an imam saying.
It
is taught in the high school of the greatest university of Al-Azhar.
Oh, yeah.
In their books. So this is taught. The Khalid bin somebody, I forgot his name, he did that. He cut his head off, put it in a pot, cooked it, and eat it, and then ding-dong with his wife. So that's like, that's all there. These are all hadiths. These are in the books. And Al-Azhar University, who graduates 150,000 people per semester, it is in the book. And also the Nikahul Mayyat is in their book. That's a chapter, Nikahul Mayyat. Nikah means sex. Mayyat means dead body. So it is in their books, man. Like, what are you telling me?
Man, we got to do a whole show on that, dude. But let me get back to defending Muhammad, since all you haters and Islamophobes seem to just be attacking the greatest man. I honestly do not understand how you can attack the greatest man in the world. First of all,
I'm not attacking, I'm showing that he is the greatest man.
exactly. The greatest man. Okay, well, first of all, okay, come on, dude. Haven't you ever owned a hot little slave? You know, she's cleaning around your house. I mean, come on, man. Clearly that's her fault. Ain't nothing wrong with that. You brought up Thomas Jefferson. Actually, this is no joke. Muslims have used this in an argument. You see, Thomas Jefferson, that you consider one of the greatest minds of the 1700s, you know, the father of women, democracy, et cetera, et cetera. See, he had sex with slaves, so what's the problem Muhammad doing? You see, you know, right? Makes sense? Okay. All right. And by the way, there is a lecture by Yasser Qadhi about what the slave mothers. What did you call them? Were the mothers of slaves or slaves?
Umul Walad.
He literally describes this. And you can go, anyway, he actually says, so if she became pregnant, the slave, if she became pregnant, she could hold her head up a little bit higher. Not as high as the wife, but a little bit higher. She had more dignity and more respect because she was the mother of the master.
But when did you tell her?
Yeah, exactly. But he actually makes the distinction. She could not raise her head as high as the wife, or the wives, I should say, but she had a little more higher, you know, respect with the rest of the slaves. You know what? I'm watching this and I'm listening to this and I'm like, dude, because I'm also watching The Sopranos at the same time during that time. I'm like, dude, you just described the bottom bitch. You just described a pimp relationship with women. Okay? You just described, actually, it wasn't Sopranos, it was The Shield. You just described, okay, All right. How pimps treat women. They elevate one higher than the rest of the hoes to take care of the rest of the hoes. And usually it's he's fathering the child with them. You know what I mean? And I'm like, dude, are you seriously? You're just describing to me pimpology 101. Okay? Yeah.
By the way, Quran actually talks about, most of the Muslim actually says that Quran talks about the capture of war, the right hand possess, the malakatil yameen, right? But Muhammad had sex with the woman named Maria.
Mary the Copt,
Coptic handmaiden, right? That Coptic handmaiden was not a malakatil yameen. She was a slave given to him as a gift. So
right.
If the sex is allowed to a malakatil yameen, then Muhammad had the ding-dong is with a slave who was given to him as a gift.
So
on the bed of his own wife, who went out to do something but came home early and caught Muhammad red-handedly doing the ding-dong with a slave woman who is not Malakat al-Yameen. That's what Muhammad is.
Clearly, this is the wife's fault. She should have been going about her business, not to come home. Okay, clearly, come on.
This is actually what the sickest part of this story is that Adam was just talking about, where Muhammad's having sex with Mary the Cop, and I can't remember what the name of the wife's, what his wife was, but he makes a promise. What's the name?
Hafsa.
Hafsa, right? Okay, he promises her that he would never do it again, which. And I've said this several times. I'll never do it again. I promise. I made a mistake. I'm not going to do it again. The sick part is he gets a revelation from Allah, telling him that why do you forbid that which I have given you, which your right hand. Because this is where it comes in. Where it's permissible. It's not only in the Hadith that it's permissible, but it's also from Allah that it's permissible to rape your slave girls.
Red, hold on.
Clearly, more proof that Muhammad is the greatest man.
Clearly, here.
All right? Allah actually had to give him permission to have sex with his handmaiden. Now, I mean, how many humans has Allah ever given permission to have sex with their handmaiden?
Red, hold on. Let me tell you something. The next verse is even more good, because Allah says, because Hafsa and Aisha got together, so two of his wives actually got the promise from Muhammad, okay? And Muhammad actually told Hafsa previously to not tell it to Aisha, because he cannot bear the fight with Aisha. So anyhow, Hafsa told Aisha, Aisha and Hafsa start fighting with Muhammad. Muhammad said, okay, I won't do it. Then the Quran verse got revealed. But what is the next verse of that Quran? It says, tell the woman that if they keep on fighting with you, Allah will substitute you with better, more beautiful and young girls. And if they still fight with you, then not only just Allah, but all the angels and all the Muslimin will fight against you. So for two women, Allah has to fight with them. All the angels has to fight with them. All the Muslimin has to fight with them. What is the power of two women? Imagine that through Quran. That's the power of these two women.
Well, clearly, Allah has the strong pin hand, okay? Because he smacked these women down. He let them know, because the greatest man to ever live, the greatest example to mankind, he can't have the women running around being mouthy and running their lips. So clearly, Allah had to have the strong pin hand. Okay, and smack these women down. Okay, let them know who's in charge, and that is Muhammad. Why is Muhammad in charge? Because, hello, he's the greatest man to have ever lived. Clearly.
Well, if you compare that, and this is one thing, you know, one thing here that just completely Muhammad traded in slaves. Okay, he did. We know he did, which it's in the Quran, it's in the Hadith. You're supposed to follow the Sunnah, Muhammad. You're supposed to follow his example. So if he owned slaves, if he traded slaves, if he raped slaves, had sex with them, we call it rape or whatever you want to call it, then it makes it perfectly permissible because he was the greatest man for all time. But we know today that that is completely unacceptable. But yet, when you see people practicing this pure form of Islam, like they did with ISIS, they just went back to, you know, we're just going to go by the Quran and, you know, the strictest readings of the Hadith. What's the first thing they do? They start opening up Yazidi slave markets. They're in Mosul. It's sick. Compare that to the Bible in the book of Philemon. This is why they hate Paul, because Paul is telling Philemon to take back his slave and treat him as a brother of in Christ, not as a slave, but as a brother in Christ. When we start looking at what the Bible teaches versus what the Quran teaches, it's completely different things. When we start getting on the issue of slavery, yeah, buddy. Okay, let's look at one other thing here. We've got about 14 minutes left in the show. The Golden Rule. Rad, do you know what the Golden Rule is?
The Golden Rule is whoever has the gold rules the world.
You are all over it. Whoever.
Duh.
Duh. That makes sense to me, right? The Golden Rule is do unto others that they would have them do unto you. And the Bible clearly teaches this. Matthew 5:39. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other side. Look at what Muhammad teaches as far as the Golden Rule is concerned. And this is Quran 2:194. If then anyone transgresses the prohibition against you, transgress ye likewise against him. Where we're taught not to return revilement with revilement, God is teaching them to return revilement with revilement. That is completely the opposite of what the Bible teaches. So if Muhammad's coming along and saying, look, I'm a prophet, just in the line of Abraham, I'm just like all the other prophets, whether it was 124,000, 144,000, or whatever the number is, and you're teaching something that's completely antithetical to what the New Testament teaches, how can you be a prophet like those other prophets? How can you say these types of things? Say that again, Adam.
They say eye for an eye. They actually use the eye for an eye.
Yeah. Is that in the Quran? Is the eye verse in the Quran, or is that just part of the Hadith?
Oh, there is a better verse. Read Quran chapter number 2, verse number 178, and open it. You'll like it.
What is it?
Chapter number 2, verse number 178.
2.
That is the eye for an eye for Muhammad and Allah. Imagine that. You'll start crying after reading this. That is the eye for an eye for Muhammad and Allah.
All right, let me share my screen here.
170.
I got it. I'm getting there. I'm just a very slow, technologically unadvanced person. Okay, so it says here, O you who have believed, prescribe for you legal retribution for those murdered, the free for the free, the slave for the slave, and the female for the female. But whoever overlooks what?
Stop here. Forget that. So now, there was a fight going on. There is a fight. And then after the fight, what happened is they said, we have to kill your people because you killed these many of our people, and we will going to kill your people. This, and who killed you? Who killed our people? But Muhammad Allah came up, no. For every slave that we killed of yours, you can kill our slave. For every female of yours that we killed, you can kill our female. And for every free man that we killed, you can kill our free male, whether that man actually fought or not fought. So now, imagine that's the eye for an eye of Quran. And you can read any tafsir and you can validate what I'm saying. It actually says you can kill slave for a slave, female for a female, and like females were not even fighting. But now because maybe some female were killed over there somehow, you can kill females. That's how Muhammad, the greatest man ever, perceived eye for an eye.
Okay, so is this just like a cultural norm that existed in Arabia at the time? I mean, this might just be something that was culturally practiced. But
if you read the tafsir, it is the opposite. In the tafsir, they are saying, the tribes are saying that we are going to kill your free men who fought against us. Muhammad said, no, you cannot kill these free men. You can kill their slaves.
So he's changing the cultural norms here by allowing this.
Yeah. Yeah, 2117.
Well, okay, so this isn't Muhammad. This is Allah changing the cultural norms, switching it from men to females.
Whatever he is doing. Like, for every female of ours that you kill, you kill. So that's not the problem. The problem is that I killed the female, okay? So I should be killed, not my wife. That's the problem over here.
Yeah, and that's
you see what
it's
I'm
just
doing?
It's sick. It's okay, let's do one more and we'll call it a night. Okay.
We need, like, this is not even 20%. Do like 4 sessions on this to go
through. I know, and it's just I told Rad because we were talking about, well, what are we going to talk about tomorrow night? Well, no. I said, well, let's just talk about Muhammad, the greatest man who ever lived. And I said, man, that's great. And I said, yeah, it's a target-rich environment. I mean, it's like low-hanging fruit. And what is the sad? This is what breaks my heart. And it truly does. That there are people on this planet that actually believe this guy was the greatest man to ever live. And we've only spent an hour and a half just talking about 3 different areas. He was a murderer, and I could have gone on for, I don't know where are all those papers. I got all kinds.
You could have gone on for 2 hours.
I could have got longer than that. We could have spent. We could be talking till midnight about that. Slavery, which is one of the most, you know, it's a very culturally sensitive issue here in the United States. So, you know, to talk about that is going to engender a lot of hatred towards the show and call me a lot of names, like, I don't know, a Kaffir. Oh, no, Islamophobe. That's right. To go ahead and point out that he practices, you know, these things where you can, if somebody lashes out and hurts you, then it is almost your duty, you're incumbent upon returning that revilement, where the Bible, the New Testament, clearly teaches the opposite. But he's supposed to come to confirm the Bible. And you believe he's a prophet. And this is what kills me, that people actually believe that this guy was a prophet. And this isn't us saying these things. Well, it is us saying these things, but we're only repeating what your sources say. This is not what it's the most trusted sources. Okay. Last one, greatest commandment. What are the greatest commandments? Love God and love thy neighbor as thyself. That's Matthew. That's Jesus Christ talking. What is the greatest commandments? Belief in Allah and jihad in his cause.
Have sex every day, twice a day, before going to bed and after waking up. That's Muhammad's.
And it's so, I don't even know what the word you would call that. That's so physical. What? What's that, Brad?
Yeah, what Adam said, you know, having sex twice a day before you wake up, get out of bed. I mean, come on, man. Right?
Dude, he was doing it with 11 wives at the same night without having a bath.
Come on, dude. I mean, what? Oh.
Yeah.
Show my screen, Eric, before you close. I'm
yeah,
this
okay.
Very important thing. So Muhammad had 16 privileges. These privileges are from Quran. So Muhammad was given special 16 privileges. These are actually backed up by Quran, but we don't have the time, so I'm going to just read the privileges. To be fair with the spoils of war, which includes the women as well. To take a fifth or the fifth of the total spoil of war. So whenever the spoil of war is, one fifth is for Muhammad before distributing to the rest of them. And to do ding-dong while fasting. No Muslim can do ding-dong while fasting. Muhammad can. To take more than 4 women, only Muhammad can have more than 4 wives, no other Muslim can have more than 4. To marry, yastakhneen, without the consent of the husband or anybody, which means secretive marriage, which means just ding-dongs, you are actually not married. So this only applicable to Muhammad. Sixth.
That's not a muta marriage.
No, it's not a muta marriage, that is just one night ding-dong. To marry yastakhin without the presence of a legal guardian or anything. So once again, sex permission, also marry. And also to marry without dowry. So you do not actually pay anything to the woman. You still do ding, 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 dong. Okay? 8. To marry during the state of ritual and purification. So during Hajj, nobody can marry. Nobody can have sex. They're actually translating the word nikah as marry. But you know what the real meaning is. Nikahul mayyat, I just already told you. It's not means marriage of dead body. It means ding-dong of dead body. 9. Annulment of oath. So Muhammad can annulment the oath with his wife, because Quran said that, as Eric, you actually told. Muhammad can marry. Muhammad, if puts his eye on a woman, that guy's woman's husband has to divorce her so that Muhammad can marry. That is the 10th commandment.
Is that from where he, from Zayd and Zabnib?
Yeah. 11th. The Prophet released Safiya and gave her freedom as the marriage dowry. To enter into Makkah without the stage of purification, so Muhammad is the only one who can go into Makkah while he is ding-donging, so while he is not even taking the bath. And to fight in Makkah, which Muhammad did, like I showed you, that he ordered to kill specific people in Makkah. No other people can do that. So, and 16 is very important. If you divorce a woman, she remains prohibited to anyone and everyone to ever marry. Full stop.
And that was the sad part I made a couple shows ago about Aisha. I mean, she's such a young woman when he died, and she would never be able to marry a man after that.
Exactly.
That is just
in these 16, you can see 11 of these, 12 of these are about Muhammad ding dong. So how come is he a prophet even? When like all of the privileges has nothing to do with the humanity or the people or the Muslimin, like all of these are for his own ding dong pleasure.
Okay, we're gonna have to figure out another verb to describe that process rather than ding donging. It is pretty classic. I don't want to think about how to say that on the radio.
Listen, everything you just described, clearly Allah gave him these permissions. If he wasn't the greatest man to have ever lived or the greatest man in the world, Allah would not have given him these rights. Clearly, you are just describing all the greatest things that makes him the greatest man. I mean, do you see what I'm saying?
But how are they beneficial for the Muslimin that are following him? What is the benefit of this special privilege? So, for example, when Moses got the special privilege where he can throw his stick and the water split and the people went through it, okay? When the Moses stick became snake, when all of these things happened, like all of these prophets who were giving certain miracles, certain things, certain privileges, they were for the benefit of their community. How are these privileges has to do anything with the benefit of the community or the afterwards? Like this is like
No. This is not a debate topic on what is beneficial for the Ummah. This is what is the greatest man to ever exist. Clearly everything you are describing, Allah gave him all these permissions.
Well, I tell you what we're gonna do, guys.
He is the greatest man. I'm just saying, you prove my point. Thank you very much. Astaghfirullah. All hamd due to Allah. You know what?
Okay, you had a couple things that you wanted to say here at the end of the show, Rad, before we cut it.
So we got some announcements. We got some sponsors coming. Camel Toe Cola. It's going to come up. as well as Semen Guard.
Semen Guard. We never showed Semen Guard.
If only Aisha had Semen Guard at the time, Muhammad would not have shown up to the masjid with semen on his shoulder, because it gets out those tough semen stains, you know, the ones especially on your shoulder. Okay, I'm just saying.
Can you show the hadith of semen guard?
No, I can't do that yet. No, these are just coming up. We're in negotiations. We're still working. Because it's the Jews, they're going to be paying it.
I've actually had people accuse me of being a Jew. I work for the Mossad, don't you know? And they're bringing me buckets of money, and I'm stepping it underneath my desk here to hide it from the bankers.
They're paying you more than me because I'm only getting 30 cents here. Come on, I'm just saying. All right. That's pretty much all I got.
Okay. All right. So we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. We're going to continue this next week because there was just so much we just did not cover. It makes it kind of frustrating because you can go so deep into this. When we say these times, when we say what we did tonight, when we discuss the slavery, when we discuss the murder, the violence, we're not saying it ourselves. What we're doing is we're backing it up with the most trusted Islamic sources, backing it up with Quran, backing it up with Hadith, backing it up with the Sirah. And I think that we need to continue this. So when people do view this, they need to know that it's not us that they're contending with. It's their own sources that they're contending with. So what we're going to do, and I see Alaskan just in the show. I'm sorry, buddy, but we're getting ready to punch out. All right, we're going to punch out. Guys, we will see you next week.
Bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye now. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All right. See you guys later. You guys take care.
Stop the live stream. You know, you're in. You're going to stop it. There you go.
Yep. Okay. Could you guys hear that stuff at the end from Blog Talk Radio?
Barely.
It was pretty bad.
Okay, I'm going to have to figure out how to...